Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and welcome. So glad you're with us today. Today is Tuesday, August 22nd, so we're off to a good start already because I got that part right. And we've got, I hope everyone survived the big eclipse yesterday. You know, I did read that there were certain animals that were very sensitive to the length of the day, and that was a comment made by Carol Henderson. She's a supervisor with the Department of Natural Resources. It could be seen at the Minnesota Zoo where 16 red kangaroos and 25 wallabies were up and grazing as if it were dusk instead of lounging in the shade to conserve energy. Just so you know, I am more clever than the average red kangaroo. I continued to lounge in the shade yesterday, conserving energy during the eclipse. Just so you know. There's also a male albino Joey was play boxing with his mother. I'm not so sure it's a good idea to pick on your mother. Pretty sure mama could land a punch that could knock you into next weekend. So you got to be awfully careful with that. And as I'm looking at my book that was given to me by Dr. David Stevens, who's going to be on the program today, which I just love, by the way, it's called Servant Leadership, Proverbs for Today's Leaders. It says, talking about possession principles. Number one, honor God with what you have. Number two, be content with what you have. Number three, make the most of what you have. Number four, take good care of what you have. And number five, share what you have. That's good advice, good wisdom. It's important to do that. I also saw an interesting story in Arkansas. A thief uprooted an entire ATM with a forklift. The person loaded the ATM, which was at one of the drive-through lanes at a First Service Bank, onto a truck and drove off. A bank worker noticed the drive-through area was damaged when she came to work Wednesday. Police say they think the thief works in the construction industry. Do you have a spare forklift sitting in the driveway? Because if you don't, you probably are also in the construction industry. I'd like to see that police report. Yeah, we have a forklift driving with an ATM on the front going about 8 miles an hour. If you see it, let us know. Anyway, we've got a great program this morning. We're going to talk about what the president said last night regarding Afghanistan. We've got Jared Stepman on the studio line. He is from the Daily Signal. We're going to chat with him in just a minute. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I hear a little banjo music coming, which makes me very happy. Good morning. It's 8 minutes after the hour. I have on our studio line Jared Stepman. He is from the Daily Signal, and he is a first-time guest of the show. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being with us. Do you live in the D.C. area?
Yes, I do. I live in Washington, D.C.
All right. Well, just because you've never been on the show, I know I'd love to learn a little bit about you. So for the next 38 minutes, tell us about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Jared Stepman. I'm originally from Oakland, California, and I came over to Washington, D.C. about 5 years ago. I've been an editor and a journalist in Washington. I work for a publication named Human Events. I've been an editor for Breitbart News, and I've also been an editor for the Daily Signal, which is where I've been writing and putting out pieces. I write a lot of commentary, and yeah, that's kind of my story.
That's awesome. That's a great resume. So, anyway, let's jump into the big news of the day, which is President Trump's speech last night. What did you make of it?
So this was actually a very big, kind of important step for the Trump administration in essentially re-upping his commitment to the war in Afghanistan. This is something that I think there was a lot of discussion as far as, well, are we going to be pulling back our commitment to Afghanistan? Are we going to re-up? And I think last night he definitely committed to doubling down on our commitment to Afghanistan and explained that he was going to certainly add to the troop levels. Now, he didn't get into specifics as far as how many troops he would add there, but that he would essentially have more troops on the ground, and specifically he would give a lot of leeway to his commanders there. And that this has been something that's been very big for Trump and certainly the head of the NSC, which is H.R. McMaster, is that there would be more local control of the operations there, and that it would be definitely a military-led campaign instead of a political one. Now, there are certainly some people, some of his supporters, that are not happy with the larger commitment to the region. I think some believe that Trump would back off from Afghanistan, that the war has been going on too long there. But to a certain extent, this is part of his commitment that the United States wants to win wars and that a Taliban resurgent there and it has been such a problem. It's something that needs to be dealt with. It can't be allowed to be a continual festering wound that spins out of control. So, there certainly is going to be a lot of debate and discussions, certainly among Trump supporters, as far as whether this is the wise decision going forward, as far as how long we're going to stay committed to it. But Trump has definitely indicated that he's going to double down his commitment and believes he can win this war in Afghanistan.
Jarrett, do you think that the president, he says that he wants to go and kill the terrorists. I suppose that's probably a smarter thing to say than I want to continue this war in Afghanistan, because I think people are war weary, aren't they?
Yeah, I would say that I think people want to win this war. I think the problem is, I'm 30 years old. We've been fighting this war for basically half my life. Mm-hmm. I think there's certainly a lot of concern that, well, we've been there for so long. When exactly does this war end? At the same time, to allow a region to continue to spin out of control and be a terrorist hotbed is such an issue that I think that, and look, we don't have the level of commitment that we had several years ago, where we had over 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. Currently, there are about 8,000, and the Pentagon has already laid out a plan earlier this year that maybe there'd be about 4,000 more troops there on the ground. So we're not talking about levels of commitment that we saw a few years ago. But of course, the problem is, can you sit around and watch as the region continues to spiral out of control and continues to be the kind of hotbed that led, of course, to the attack on September 11th. So I think there's certainly an element of people are just tired of being there. They're tired of wasting money in the region, and they're tired of having American troops committed there for so long. But at the same time, you have to say, what risk are we willing to take to allow this to stay there as bad as it is, especially with the Taliban, stronger than they were before. Mm-hmm. So I think that the president is weighing those concerns and is leaning toward, we have to do something to stop the problems that are there right now.
Mm-hmm. Jarrett, the president wanted to end the war in Afghanistan prior to his election, and now that he's in the Oval Office, he wants it to continue. Will he be severely criticized for that capitulation?
I think for amongst some of his supporters, I think they'll be disappointed. Look, he also said that, he was going to win wars. I mean, he wasn't just saying he was going to win, get out of Afghanistan. He said that, well, with me in charge, we're going to be winning our wars. We're not going to be retreating for them, too. So I think to a certain extent, he's assessed that this one is at a critical stage where we need a higher level of commitment. I think it will definitely be the voices that come out against. I think it'll, to a certain extent, split some of his core supporters, but a lot of people, they voted for him in office because they trust his judgment. And I think that certainly he will get some blowback on this, but that ultimately I don't think his base of support is going to collapse because he made this commitment. from certain sectors from the left that criticizes him, they will probably continue to criticize him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think from his base, I think you'll have some that certainly dissent from this, but a lot of others that say, well, you know, if the president says that we need a higher commitment, we're going to be okay with that.
Yeah. Jared, I'm going to take a quick break, but when I come back, I want to ask you about your thoughts on Steve Bannon's departure from the White House. And I also want to touch base with a few other subjects. One's being Colin Kaepernick making Black History Museum before Clarence Thomas. What's up with that? Anyway, it's 15 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute with Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Talking to Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal. He possesses many qualities that can't be taught. One being curiosity. He's a curious person that does his homework. Jared, it's so nice to have you on the show. Let me ask you about Steve Bannon's departure for the White House. That's been a pretty turbulent run. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's actually kind of it's interesting timing also with the ramping up the war in Afghanistan. I think Mr. Bannon has been one of the voices in the White House is a little bit against that move.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that Trump is now engaging in this. Now, you know, I think a lot of people have made a little too much about, well, this means, you know, Bannon is, you know, his influence is going to be purged. I think there's a lot of similarities between how Bannon thinks and how Trump thinks for sure. It is a very interesting move because, of course, I think there are a lot of people saying, well, you know, does this mean the Trump administration is going to be making a pivot to the center? Or are they going to be staying, which you consider conservative? So it is a very interesting moment with the Trump administration. But I don't think it's something that should be seen as unusual. I mean, he's certainly gone through a lot of staff in his time there. There's definitely been churn, certainly with the communications team. So, you know, to see Trump make this change isn't entirely surprising. And frankly, with Bannon, who is a media guy, he's going back to Breitbart News, where he originally came from. This doesn't mean necessarily that there's some long-term divorce between their ideas or his influence as possible. You know, he's even said himself that he's going to fight Trump's fights from Breitbart News. So, you know, to a certain extent, I think some people may be worried that, well, you know, is he going to go a totally different direction? But, you know, maybe he sees this as, you know, an opportunity to maybe calm down some of the discord in the White House, at the same time use Bannon's strength, which is media and getting a message out, and putting, you know, having him back in place where he's doing that.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jared, us upper Midwesterners are always curious as to what it's like in Washington, D.C. So I appreciate your perspective from D.C. Talk a little bit about the monument destruction that's going on, how the conversation goes in your neck of the woods. Like, for example, in Baltimore,
right,
this 225-year-old monument to Christopher Columbus is still standing, but it was severely vandalized.
Right. So these attacks on monuments have gone on throughout the country. It is interesting because I live here in Washington, D.C. We have a lot of monuments here in the city. We have statues to a lot of Civil War generals, a lot of great Americans, and a really diverse array of people. It's incredible to see, I mean, really just within the last week, how many monuments and statues have been defaced around the country. I mean, just after this incident that took place in Charlottesville, Virginia, this very ugly incident, nevertheless, frankly, mobs have gathered and vandals have desecrated monuments throughout the country. It is, you know, quite disturbing to see that essentially people like Christopher Columbus, there was a Junipero Serra monument defaced in California, an Abraham Lincoln statue,
mm-hmm,
was actually attacked by explosives in Chicago.
Wow.
And there was even a report from last night that a statue in Houston, somebody planned to bomb it with a bomb. Unfortunately, that plot was stopped before it happened. Now, I guess you could say it's better than people, human beings being attacked, but it certainly is a disturbing trend in this country when people are going around looking for 100-year-old statues to destroy. And I think it's a very, it's a very sad thing to see this continually happening. And you know, I think the president was right when he looked at this movement to take down what are these Confederate monuments, and he said, well, you know, what's going to be next after this? It's going to be George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Like, unfortunately, I think what you're seeing with this is this debate kind of quickly moved from the Confederate monuments to other ones, and mine's got absolutely nothing to do with the Confederacy. Ones like Christopher Columbus and a lot of American heroes. So I think this whole movement is a little disturbing, and it's sad to see these in some cases very beautiful old monuments that unfortunately people probably don't pay much attention to. Get attacked by vandals and mobs.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jared, I would imagine that in Washington, D.C., this is going to be another very interesting topic. The National Museum of African American History and Culture are featuring Colin Kaepernick, the NFL quarterback. He will be featured in a Black Lives Matter collection at the museum, and that is ahead of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, the nation's longest-serving black justice, yet he remains absent from that museum. Talk about that.
Yeah, I have to say this really is kind of an unbelievable move by the museum, which is here along the National Mall in Washington, D.C. It's kind of a sad thing. I mean, there was a lot of uproar about the fact that Justice Thomas was not included in this museum. I mean, he was clearly a man. He was the second black Supreme Court justice in American history. He's clearly had an enormous influence on the court in his decisions. And he's a very important figure for them to have been excluded. And there had already been some pressure from Congress to include him as part of the, at least have some kind of mention of him in the museum at all. But that is still yet to materialize. And now we have this kind of unbelievable moment where this quarterback, formerly of the 49ers, who became famous, of course, for sitting down at during the national anthem for protesting the flag and the national anthem, now he's going to be included in this Black Lives Matter section of the museum. I think there are a lot of people that are thrown off by this. It seems to be, you know, why aren't we honoring this great man who's had so much influence on America, who clearly, you know, rose up from a difficult childhood, and he put himself through the Ivy League, and he became a Supreme Court justice. Why are we honoring that man? Why are we honoring the guy who sat down at a football game and is a backup quarterback and now is currently unemployed? You know, I think for a lot of people, it just seems like the kind of raw politicalization of, you know, sports, along with the unfairness toward a lot of conservatives in this country. And certainly I think there are a lot of people that are looking at this move just like, well, I mean, are we going to ever honor Justice Thomas at this museum? And I think it's a really sad thing.
I agree. Jared, it seems like it will take an act of Congress to get Congress to act. It's interesting. We just have less than a minute left, but President Trump could cut budgets and leave federal money unspent, which could make it even more difficult for Congress, huh?
Yeah, that's for sure. I actually think that it's an unusual move. A lot of these departments are considering just not spending money that's appropriate. And certainly the State Department is one of the big ones. And I think there's certainly a lot of yelping going on from Congress. But, you know, this is something that Trump said that he would do. I mean, he was a guy who came from a business background. He wanted to streamline government. And, you know, I think this is kind of a move to say, hey, we're going to stop spending on these projects, and maybe we're just going to actually start to cut back on a lot of these departments. I mean, there's definitely a lot of excess bloat in our government. I think most people around the country know this. I mean, they might not know it in Washington, D.C., but I think people around the nation say, well, you know, our government's gotten so big, and these departments are out of control and have so much power. You know, a good thing is the president is doing something to get it under control, and that means not spending as much money. That means cutting it down to size.
Yeah. Thank you, Jared Stepman, very much for being on the program. We just really enjoyed talking to you. You got a lot of wisdom.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, have a great day.
You too.
It's 27 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back. We've got a lot coming up. We're going to go to lighten up now. Good morning, half past the hour. So glad you're with us today. We're going to go to news, and then we're going to talk to Jeremy Keaton. He's the director of counseling from Focus on the Family, sometimes talking to your children about things like racism and violence. Those are hard conversations, so we're going to get some nice advice from Jeremy. Back in a minute. Good morning, 25 minutes until the top of the hour. You know, when you live by your core values and convictions, you attract others to you. CEO of Team Open Book, Sharon Sampson, share some thoughts on sharing your vision in a compelling way.
I think that it's really important to give people information and data and statistics, but I think that ultimately making an argument or making a case is not going to move people to give as much as unveiling a dream and a calling and invitation to be part of something bigger than themselves. So I think the cornerstone of my business approach and what I feel my calling is with my team is to help people embed mission into how they communicate and what they're saying so that people are called towards something. People are going after something, and not for their own sake, not just for the sake of using God language or mission language to get into people's wallets or pocketbooks. That's not what it's about. But the idea of if there truly is a mission or a vision that you're going after where you want to see lives changed and people experience grace and encounter the gospel or serve the poor or pursue justice, whatever the mission is, if you believe it's so important, it matters so much, you want to call people toward that thing. And I think too often we sell that short by just giving data points and information and making an academic argument, which has its place, but I don't think that's usually the last word. I think the last word is when you speak to people's hearts and make them feel part of something beyond just themselves.
If you want to hear that entire interview, head over to myfaithradio.com and you can type in Sharon Sampson, S-A-M-P-S-O-N, or you can type in core values. And there's a high likelihood you'll find your way there. All right, coming up next, we've got Jeremy Keaton. He's the director of counseling service from Focus on the Family, and he spells his name G-E-R-E-M-Y, Jeremy. So I'm going to start a Kickstarter campaign to raise money to help him spell his name the correct way. Take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I know last weekend violence overtook the streets of Charlottesville, Virginia, and boy, we were seeing the evil of racism. It was been dominating the headlines, and it's become the topic of conversation. Of course, we see violence like this on TV screens nationally, and kids are oftentimes sitting there with their parents going, hey, what's up with this? Why are people being so mean to each other? And so as we're trying to figure out ways to explain and process this with our kids, it might be a good idea to turn to Focus on the Family. The director of counseling, Jeremy Keaton, can share a biblical perspective on the importance of what it's like to love others, no matter what their race or beliefs might be. Jeremy, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Bill. It is great to be with you and on such an important topic in influencing our kids. Thanks for having us on.
Of course. We always love Focus on the Family folks, and it's nice to have you as a guest on the show for the first time. Tell me a little bit about you real quick.
Oh, I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. I've served on staff with Focus on the Family for 16 years, the director of the counseling services team. We have about 15 counselors here that return calls and consult families, and we love to connect with families out there with current issues that are going on like this and other things they're facing, Bill. So it's a privilege to lead that team of servants here at Focus on the Family.
So it's safe to say then that the calls you might get would include topics like what?
Well, you know, we have a phrase here. We say that we handle phone calls on everything from potty training to pornography addiction. So
okay.
Family issues are pretty broad, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are.
What we're facing, it could be everyday needs or it could be a crisis and difficult point for a marriage or in parenting. So we really run the gamut, and we're, again, honored to do so with families that call and people in marriage situations as well, Bill.
All right. So let's process what we watched on television over the weekend with the news in Charlottesville.
Well, you know, you mentioned the word evil, And it is important that we talk to our kids, not overexpose them, not oversaturate them. You need to be age appropriate, but we need to be the first ones talking to our kids about the fallenness and the evil in the world. But there is a starting place, and I don't think that starting place is necessarily even focusing on the negative. It's cueing off the negative and talking about what's scriptural, what is good. You know, Bill, love is evil, I should say, is best understood in contrast to God's love and to his goodness. So you can really start there. Some parents wonder, is this too heavy for my kids? Well, go back and start with something scriptural, like John 3:16.
Mm-hmm.
Start with love, and then say, that doesn't always happen. And we're seeing some evil that doesn't match God's plan, and I want to talk to you about that too.
Yeah, well, when we start to talk about words like racism, I mean, kids don't even know what that means. So how do we start connecting the dots with just the deceitfulness of the heart and how there's darkness, and a person who has not come to faith in Christ is living in a sin nature condition, and they're going to do things that lost people do.
Yes, and again, rewinding the tape back to something positive as the platform and then talking about the evil. I would even suggest a phrase like this. You know, sweetheart, God made us for relationships and for love and to respect others and show dignity and honor both to ourselves and others. And as a matter of fact, Jesus gave one of the greatest commandments. And do you remember what that is? And you ask questions and cue off of what they know and say, you know, Jesus's greatest commandment was to love God with all your heart and to similarly treat your neighbor as you would like to be treated and love your neighbor just like you would love and take care of yourself. And there is something going on that doesn't match that right now, and it's called racism. Did you see that thing on the news? Or you cue off of their question, Bill, when they're asking about what they saw on the news. And then you say racism is believing that one group of people is better than another just based upon their background or their color. That's not part of God's plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask open-ended questions about what they understand about that. It's going to change from age to age. You don't want to go too far with someone who's too young, but be age appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to be prepared to find out what they're going to be learning at school as well, don't you? And you're going to have to, you know, even at that young age, equip them to have responses because they're going to be hearing different things at school as well, aren't they, Jeremy?
Well, they're going to be hearing things at school, and here's a good word picture to get them ready for school. You know what a parent does is they help pack the backpack for a kid going to school. And on this issue, metaphorically, you want to just put the right amount of tools, not more tools than they can use, that weigh them down. You don't give a five-year-old a theological treatise in an exegetical explanation from Scripture about everything. You just put the tools he needs for that day in his backpack so he's not weighed down, and just the right amount for that age. You know, younger than three, kiddos are just going to be cueing off of parental emotions. They're going to be cueing off of what you allow yourself to say in their presence. And then 4 to 7 is an age range where you can really briefly talk about an issue and pray together. But 8 to 12, those discussions are going to expand some, and you may even be able to talk about how do we solve this problem in our world or in our family so that we are respecting others. You apply it a little more with that 8 to 12. And, of course, with teenagers, you're going to become much more open and really coach them through and ask a lot of open-ended questions about what they're hearing.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jeremy, it's maybe you can help me put this in a context, because kids today, I mean, I'm having one of those moments in my day, you know, and I'm thinking about some of the topics, some of the sensitive issues that kids are being asked to process at such a young age. I mean, I don't recall ever having discussions about racism when I was in grade school.
Well, I think that media does bring a lot of things to us that we need to discuss today. But, you know, this has been an age-old problem and around for millennia. And I think that really being proactive with your kids and not over-sheltering, not feeling like, you know, I have to keep them in a bubble, but again, putting the right news in front of them at the right amount. There is such a thing as oversaturation from the media, though, and I want to talk about that a moment as well, that you need to filter media content because, like you're saying, Bill, there can be topics that weigh them down and take them out of childhood. We do want to let a kid be a kid.
Yeah.
We want to equip them as well, and that is just a discerning process.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to ask you more about the oversaturation, and I also want to ask you about the way your team handles more than 40,000 calls on family issues like grief and sexual abuse and marriage and addictions and all that, and I want to find out what questions rise to the surface and how you handle some of those. I think our listeners would be very curious to hear that. Talking to Jeremy Keaton, we'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking to Jeremy Keaton from Focus on the Family's Christian Counselors Network. Jeremy, I have a question about how, as Christians, do we process the oversaturation of what's in the news right now and not politicize it so we can continue just to look through a gospel lens?
You know, I think it's so important what you said about looking through a gospel lens. When we see something horrific going on in our world, on the one hand, it should give us outrage because justice is planted in our hearts if we're connected to the gospel and to the Lord Jesus. And yet at the same time, it shouldn't surprise us because the world is fallen. And if you have a biblical worldview, you can be teaching that to your children of saying, without God, this is the way man goes. This is the way society goes. And I'm so glad that we can talk about in our home what Jesus did and the free gift of love and life and dignity that he offers to every human being. That is a place you can take these discussions, especially when there is that media exposure like we mentioned earlier, Bill.
Mm-hmm. What if they're not your kids, but you want to help? Maybe that would be the roles for mentors or grandparents or something like that, youth ministers?
Oh, you can absolutely influence a life and a family simply by being a loving friend and mentor in your churches, if you have contact with school systems, if you're a teacher, you can make all the difference in a person's life. I know in my life that was the case. And if someone is coming alongside a loved one and they're looking for resources, and you yourself maybe aren't having the struggle in your family, but you want to be a good neighbor and you know how to engage with someone and share Focus on the Family resources, you want to know how to engage with the people in your community and share some of the materials we have, we'd love to speak to you as well. Focus on the Family offers a plethora of downloads, family helps, books, question and answers online, things that just out of your caring relationships, you can pass along and connect people to us, and we will equip you as you're being salt and light in the culture. That would be our privilege, Bill.
So, Jeremy, when you're handling the team's topics on all the calls that you get at the Counseling Center, I know our listeners would be curious because, you know, sometimes when you have a problem, you feel like you're alone, you're the only one dealing with the problem. That's not true. What are some types of calls that surface more regularly than others? And what is the response that you might be giving to those calls? I know that's kind of a vague question, so I'm throwing it out there.
I am pleased to talk about what we do every day. You know, Focus on the Family helps marriages thrive and helps parents engage their children and have a thriving home. And so we get the bulk of our calls on the broad topics, umbrella of marriage and parenting. But in marriage, many times people do feel alone, that they don't want what is happening in their home maybe known, or they're not quite sure what's normal. They're calling us and saying everything from, you know, I'm having a communication issue with my spouse and we're fighting more, to something as heartbreaking as I'm finding evidence of possibly an affair. What steps do I take to talk to my husband or wife about this? How do we find counseling and start recovery? And those are the places that Focus on the Family meets husbands and wives in their hour of difficulty. And I will tell you, it's an honor and privilege to do that confidentially through a, a phone consultation with them here. We have a referral network. We have trained and licensed counselors of various professions, psychologists and as well as social workers and professional counselors on our phone lines here, taking up to 40,000 completed calls each year here.
Mm-hmm. Because I know a lot of people are sitting there feeling a little desperate going, who do I reach out to? Who could I have a conversation with? Who I need to talk to someone maybe today. And the network may be a resource for them. Is that correct?
Yes, you can call 1-800-A-FAMILY. That's 1-800-A-FAMILY. And one of our family health specialists will get information from you, and then we'll call you back from our counseling department and do a consultation with you that is confidential, safe. We will pray with you. We'll talk about what it takes to just take that next step today. What's the most practical, biblical step in the midst of your challenge, in your parenting challenge, your marriage challenge? We also get calls about addictions, personal addictions or addictions in loved ones, relationships with adult children that are strained in families. And what we do, Bill, is just come alongside with a caring voice and say, let me hear your story, and let me tell you that you're not the only one I've heard this story from, and I want you to know that there's victory and hope in this, and even if there's challenge in this, God is with you, and here are some practical tools, some resources, and we have a national counseling referral network, Bill, with counselors around our nation and our Christian Counselors Network that we refer to.
Okay, and one last question. Now, you do this all day long, so you listen to a lot of difficult questions, and you hear what's on the hearts, which is heavy for many people. You sit and listen and process that. What do you do at the end of the day to decompress a little?
You know, one of the things we also tell parents we have to live by it ourselves is, how do I put my oxygen mask on first? How do I breathe in oxygen so that I can be of help to others around me? You know, on the airplane, the flight attendant will say, should the cabin lose pressure, please put your oxygen mask on first before helping the person or the child beside you. And so we try to take that time to connect with our families, close down the digital media when we leave the office. Also, place into God's hands what we cannot control through both prayer, meditation, taking a walk, knowing what feeds your soul. For me, often that's nature. And I think as parents and even as husbands and wives, do you know how to fill up your cup with something that blesses your life, gives you energy? Because when you do that, you can pour into others. But when your cup is dry and you have nothing, you have no water to pour into the world around you. So it is not selfish to take care of yourself. It is self-caring and allows you to be a blessing to others.
And that is some great wisdom to end our conversation with. Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been speaking to Jeremy Keaton. He is the Director of Counseling at the Focus of the Family Christian Counselors Network. Have a great day, Jeremy. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you, Bill. Privileged to be here.
You bet. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute.
The early bird catches the worm. The really early bird catches the early morning late show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
We're sharing each day together.
The world is not helping our faith increase, but Faith Radio presents us with truths, and our soul needs nothing more than to have the truth presented on such a regular basis to encourage us, to lift us up, to let us know that we're not alone in the midst of our trials. So Faith Radio is a lifeline to me, and I know that confidently if people are seeking the truth, it's invaluable to just developing fellowship and communion with the Lord.
Thanks for being part of the family of Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's a couple minutes until the top of the hour. We've got a great second hour coming up. Dr. David Stevens from the Christian Medical and Dental Association will be with us. Looking forward to that. And then Dr. Everett Piper, he wrote an op-ed in the paper that went completely viral. He was calling college students snowflakes for being so overly sensitive and so trigger-happy with the way in which they would be offended. So we're going to talk to him. He's written a book called Not a Daycare, and that's going to be a fascinating conversation. So you have to stay tuned for that. I just saw that Jay-Z and Beyonce bought a home in Los Angeles, only paid $88 million for it. So there you go. And their mortgage, because they did conventional financing, and of course, you would have to, wouldn't you? Their monthly payment is $252,000 a month. So I suppose they have to cut back in other places, I would imagine. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break and then start again in just a few minutes with hour two of the Early Morning Late Show. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.